I'm Mallory Rubin.
And I'm Van Lathan.
Check out the Ringerverse podcast from The Ringer for all things superhero movies, nerd culture, and fandom entertainment.
We have instant reviews and fun takes on all the latest news and more, available now on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio podcast, The Ringer SC. I'm Misok Ponga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing since yesterday?
It's Friday then. It's Saturday. Sunday, what? Stadio on a Friday.
It's a vibe. I like it.
Stadio on a Friday is a vibe, actually.
It is a vibe.
We'll probably do a couple more Friday ones over the rest of the season.
Yeah, just given the action, yeah.
How are you?
Very good, actually. Yeah, Berlin is lovely at the moment. Weather is just warming up nicely, 18, 19 degrees, and peaceful city. Really enjoying it, yeah.
We hope everyone stays safe, staying well, obviously, since yesterday. If you haven't checked it already, check Thursday's Stadio about this week's Champions League games. Today, we are going to talk about the first legs of the Europa League and the Conference League semi-finals. Everything's really in the balance.
Yeah, very much so.
Very intriguing. We'll also talk about a couple of other games, and we'll talk about the big news that Jurgen Klopp has extended his contract to Liverpool. Oh, what a day to be a Liverpool fan. What a time to be a Liverpool fan.
What a decade wow. To be a Liverpool fan, yeah.
So we'll get on to all of that after this. All right, and where should we begin? Should we start with the Europa League and then move on to the Conference League? Although I do think that probably the game of the night was in the Conference League.
It was, yeah. And the two most extra set of fans maybe in Europe, the final of Marseille.
I don't know, what do you want to do? Do you want to start with final Marseille, or do you want to start with the Europa League and then we'll do the Conference League?
I think out of respect for the Europa League, we start with that, yeah.
Yes, respect the Europa League.
Respect,
that should just
respect.
Be the tagline.
Listen, if it didn't have respect before, it certainly got it now. Maybe West Ham Eintracht.
Yeah.
Maybe start with that. Eintracht winning this 2-1, and this is a team in a hurry. It's so interesting how under Glasner, Eintracht has basically kind of recovered the mantle of being that cup team, or retained it. Like, you know, with Niko Kovac being so strong in the cups. And Glasner, I think the thing he loves about coaching, Oliver Glasner, the thing he loves about coaching Eintracht in cup competitions is he really gets to do all his tactical fiddling. But I think what's interesting about them in the Europa League is you've seen this are the tacticals of the ferocity, really. I mean, like, there's not many teams that will go to that stadium and go at West Ham like they did. They just have no respect at this point. They're probably the most disrespectful team in Europe at this point.
That's so funny you said that, because I was literally about to say that.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they came straight out of the blocks. We're in the lead, what, in 90 seconds?
Mm.
And a lovely, lovely goal from Knauf on loan from Dortmund. Who, to be honest, is someone who Dortmund could have probably done with this year, considering the injuries they've had down that right-hand side. You know, Marius Wolf, for example. I don't want to turn this into a Dortmund thing already, but Marius Wolf has played in advanced positions and defensive positions on that right-hand side.
I don't understand the loan thing. I get it from his perspective.
I mean, he's played all year. That's the thing. So
yeah, fair enough.
I assume
he's young. He is young.
I hope that he comes back and slots straight into that Dortmund side, because I think this year has done him really, he's done in the world of good, and especially with Eintracht's progression through to this stage of the competition, and potentially they might make it to the final. You don't know. Yeah. I mean, there's still another leg to go, but just a statement of intent from the jump from Eintracht, and it was from a West Ham point of view, it was such a shame because there was such an amazing atmosphere before the game, and when you're into the first semi-final in what, over 40 years, European semi-final over 40 years, since you last played Eintracht, I played Eintracht the last time as well, actually.
Oh, wow.
And it's probably, well, it is the biggest night in that new stadium for West Ham fans. And then to kind of see all of that optimism just get sucked out of the stadium after 90 seconds was a real shame for them. But then I actually thought they got back into the game really well. They didn't panic too much. They hit the post a few times. That final one, obviously, from Jarrod Bowen right at the end.
Great effort. They were good value for a draw as well, to be honest.
They were. I think the game was so tight in terms, and quite finely balanced, I think, in terms of different periods of the game. Each side kind of was building some quite nice momentum.
There's a lot of ebb and flow, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Kamada hit the post for Eintracht as well off that deflected shot. I think a draw, or to be honest, a single goal lead from either side wouldn't have been a massive travesty.
It's hard work for West Ham. They're going there now. It's hard work.
Well, this is my concern. I mean, let's talk about the goals first. The West Ham goal to get back into it was, this was such a we're back in it European tie goal. Do you know what I mean by
that?
Just kind of like a couple of players going for it at the back post. Kevin Trapp about a yard and a half over his line trying to scoop it out.
Yes.
And hoping that no one noticed. And then just absolute pandemonium at West Ham. There were some really horrible reports from the ARD commentary team, who is a German broadcaster, who were attacked by some West Ham fans after the West Ham goal, I believe. Derek Ray posted a thread about it. I reposted it. They ended up having to be moved from their commentary position, but they were really concerned about the lack of protection around them. And I don't know. It's just such a shame when you hear something like that, that mars such a special occasion for a club.
Mm.
Not something you want to hear. The rest of the fans made it a very, very tasty atmosphere. Sorry, I should just say, by the way, it was Mikhail Antonio, for those who missed it, who poached the goal at the back post. Kurt Zouma with the header across. After half time, I think Eintracht had a chance really early after half time, and it kind of looked like West Ham had been caught on their heels again. And then the goal that put them in the lead, Kamada's goal, was so well worked. It was actually probably the best move of the game.
Yeah. They really open you up well, Eintracht. And I think, what I'm so happy Kamada scored in particular, because he's someone who, like him and Kostic, don't get as much attention, I think, outside Germany as they deserve.
I agree.
Those two is an attacking combo, and I just love the run he made to follow up for the goal, and he virtually walked it in. But it was a really great room they created for the shot.
Jasmine Baba wrote a great piece for DW about Kostic, actually.
Yeah, it's great, actually. That's really good. An excellent piece of analysis that she put in. He's sort of playing the wing-back role. But yeah, really, really great goal. Great opening. They worked for the shot, and Kamada just followed up and sort of walked into an empty net. That was still quite early, though, in the game.
It was only the 54th minute.
Still quite early. And West Ham, actually, at that point, I think, Fornals is impressive too, in particular. Mm. They really like just ground away, and in a style they've been doing all year. And I think David Moyes at this point, this is someone who, if we just like freeze frame and remember the protests, like just prior to the sort of the lockdown and everything, if we remember where West Ham were there and now, the fact that like David Moyes' appointment was extremely underwhelming for a lot of people.
Including us.
You know, he needed a win. This was not, it wasn't a last chance saloon for Moyes. I'm not saying this dramatic, but he needed...
I don't think it was far off though, mate.
He needed a redemptive. He needed something where, because like, certain managers have been sidelined quite quickly.
Because he'd had that period at Sunderland as well that was hugely underwhelming.
Yeah.
And he hadn't managed since the last time he'd managed West Ham, which was not a successful period. And I think that was the thing for West Ham fans. We've talked about this quite a lot on Wright's House and on Stadio before, but West Ham fans were rightly underwhelmed by the appointment. I think two things can be true.
You can be
underwhelmed by an appointment and it turns out to be a great one. It's the thing, I don't think anyone got it wrong when he turned up, because all of the evidence was there that he was probably not the right guy to push them forward. But the fact that he deserves a huge amount of credit for it. We said it numerous times before.
Yeah.
And actually, I think after the Kamada goal, going back to the game, West Ham had this like 10 or 15 minute period. I think it might have been that long. But they really seemed to be in Eintracht's half.
Yeah.
And just didn't really create, they didn't have Eintracht on the ropes enough for the amount of territorial possession that they had for that period.
I don't want to sound disrespectful to the players who've got West Ham to this point, because they've been brilliant. I just wonder, you know, that one of the most useless pieces of business is the retention of Jesse Lingard, right, at Manchester United. And I'm just saying that the extra, and I'm saying this out of all respect to West Ham fans, just like this extra joker in the pack.
Oh, he would have been amazing for
that. This is what I mean, this extra joke in the pack to inject this energy to, because the margins at this point are so small. We've seen with Luis Diaz, like for Liverpool, the impact that he makes when he comes in, either as a starter or off the bench. And I just, that was my one worry watching West Ham, was like, are you going to have that extra goal from somewhere? That extra sort of cutting edge? And what I will say as well is quite interesting. I wonder, with this deep Europa League run that they've made, and they, you know, may still end up in the final, very much, very, very easily could go to the final. I wonder what players they're now going to start attracting after this, because agents now must be looking at West Ham and going, even more so than like 2 years ago, even more so, agents now must be going, that is an absolute destination. It's really exciting what they built there.
It really is. I mean, the thing is though, well, before we move on to what we think about the second leg, just shout out Jarrod Bowen for that. Potential
outrageous effort.
Potential Puskas Award.
Oh yeah.
Even if this didn't go straight in, this so could have gone in off the back of Kevin Trapp. It kind of brushes his backside on the way out as well.
Yeah.
He almost on the slow-mo, it looks like I don't think he intentionally does it, but I think it's more instinctive maybe. It looks like he tries to maybe arch his back a little bit, almost like a high jumper. Because he knows that the ball's bounced somewhere and he's trying to just like, you know, make yourself liquid.
Yeah.
And get out of the way of it. And it kind of brushes his bum.
It's absolutely travelling as well. He really catches it clean.
Yeah. God, can you imagine though?
The noise.
I don't know why I'm doing this, because this is just cruel. But if that had gone in at that stage of the
stadium,
of the game,
would have gone
in stoppage time, that effort, it would have been...
You could have heard that from Hackney. You could have heard that roaring from... That would have gone off.
Heard it from Kew Gardens. So West Ham are still in this. They will be really encouraged by the knowledge that they went to Lyon and did them 3-0 there. However, Eintracht at home on a European night is a very different prospect, actually. No disrespect to Lyon. In Europe, they seem to just really click Eintracht. Yeah. And it's easy to forget as well that even though German stadiums have been full-ish since the turn of the year, they haven't been fully full until very, very recently, and ultras have only just returned to the stadiums in Germany, which means that there is still this real sense of, what's the word? Yeah, novelty, I suppose. The fact that they've been away for 2 years, that place will be extremely intimidating. Expect tifos, expect pyro, expect a lot of noise, and I think they can do it, West Ham. However, it's going to be an extremely tough ask.
Yeah, that is.
Because the thing about Eintracht this season is that they have been a side of extremes. They had a really, really poor start to the season where they didn't win a game in all competitions until they beat Antwerp at the end of September. They've had these really good results, but then they lost to Hertha at home. They beat Bayern away. They've not really buried teams, like in terms of a lot of goals, maybe about... I think they stuck 4 past Hertha when they played them in the Olympiastadion, but I can't remember them scoring more than that this season, and that was only once, I think. Might be wrong. I have to go back and check the results. But even on this patch of form now, they beat Barcelona and they beat West Ham, but they haven't won a game other than that since they beat Bochum in the Bundesliga on the 13th of March. So their European form and their Bundesliga form has kind of been quite different.
I mean, that's the look of a team that really is just focusing on the big prize, isn't it?
Well, it's their only route back into Europe, because they're not gonna get into the European spots in the Bundesliga. It's going to be a tough ask for West Ham. They really needed to take a lead to Frankfurt, I think.
I agree.
But
I
not
agree.
Impossible. So
could end up with an all-German final.
We could. Well, let's segue onto that, because RB Leipzig left it late to beat Rangers at the Red Bull Arena. Domenico Tedesco, after the game, he didn't look too happy. Do you know what? I really enjoyed Tedesco's post-match interviews.
I didn't see them.
He's a serious football man. And the thing that was quite funny, it was on RTL in Germany. And the panel was not dressed in the way that you would expect a German broadcaster on a European night to be dressed, let's say.
No suits and white trainers, basically.
There was someone who had to, whose name thing came up, and it was an alias, and had his Twitter, the number of Twitter followers he had.
You're joking.
There was a yellow jacket, these old school thick rimmed glasses. There was a lot going on. And then Tedesco just comes up dressed in all black, a super tight fitting black suit and a black, not quite a roll neck, but you know, the half neck. Is that
the half mask.
Because I always thought that's a turtleneck and the roll neck is the roll. That's what I always referred to when I was younger.
I mean, people just being free and easy at this point. So yeah, this is the half. Is the half?
Well,
sort of
they're
neck.
Not worried about freeing their own necks.
They're not.
What was it? Wenger said, "Freedom of movement,
freedom
walking in the woods."
I can't believe he said that. About Rolnick. This was ridiculous.
But he just comes across. He's super intense in the post-match interview. He wasn't happy. He was like, "We need to play quicker. We were too slow." And I think that's right. They laboured a little bit, Leipzig, in this game. Mounkoukou had one chance.
Really good effort, yeah. Well, no, really
scored,
good opportunity.
Actually.
Yeah. On his, especially on his form and the style of play.
Yeah, Lima had a couple of chances that he got through. Emil Forsberg with a completely contrasting overhead kick attempt to Jared Bowen's, which was just... I love Emil Forsberg. Not the time, though. That was not the time to be doing that. But then Angelino with... an unbelievable goal.
An absolute beauty.
Corner gets headed out and Angelino on the volley, left foot.
One of the
corner.
European goals of the season, that.
It was a great goal, that. Really good goal. But again, like for context and timing and stuff like that, that's an unbelievable goal.
Yeah, Rangers very resilient, I have to say. And given Leipzig's form under Tedesco and the direction they're pushing, this is actually a subpar result for Leipzig.
Massively.
They'd want to get like a 2-0 out of this. I would say for them, a par for the course was a 2-0.
Well, for all the possession they had 70% of the ball.
It's a huge, it's virtually, you virtually have it all the time at that point.
Yeah, four shots on target, but they just didn't create enough, I don't think, for that. Again, quite similar to when West Ham had that period of play where they probably should have created more. Leipzig was the same. And that, again, going to Ibrox, that's going to be an atmosphere and experience that not a lot of those Leipzig players have experienced before.
Interesting.
I mean, Dortmund struggled to hang with them at Ibrox. There's something about... the way that Tedesco has got Leipzig clicking since he came in, though, bar the odd. I mean, they had a really disappointing result last weekend at home to Union. You could see there was still a bit, I don't want to use a Wengerism, but there was a little bit, they were a little bit handbrakey.
That's interesting. I wonder if, you know, that's going to be a problem because if you look at what Rangers done in the domestic cups, they might fly out. This might be one of those ones where they come out like intense in the home leg and have a different approach. You know, like Atleti have those contrasting styles. Atleti were basically like lock up shop away, and at their place, they really like go at you from the first 10, 15. Mm-hmm. I wonder if Rangers do something similar when they get back to theirs.
Well, I think this is the interesting thing about the Conference League and the Europa League at the moment is that you have teams with a real history of going deep in European competitions at various points, like Rangers Cup Winners' Cup in the 70s, UEFA Cup finalists. There's a history there, like in the Conference League when you have Marseille and Feyenoord and all of these.
Yeah,
sides.
Yeah. It feels quite heritage. I must say, I do like...
I think it's been really interesting, actually. Yeah.
I must say, you know, we've been critical of UEFA in, you know, rightly so in many ways, but this is a thing that I enjoy. I'm not, and I haven't seen as many criticisms of player fatigue as I thought I'd see. Or fixture clogging. I have fixture congestion. I haven't seen as many as I expected it. I've seen a few, but not like clubs like Union being in Europe. That was a huge deal.
This is the thing. It's that middle class of clubs, which sounds like a really disrespectful thing to say, but it's not. It's the clubs who aren't fatigued by regular European qualification, or they haven't maybe made it into the Champions League every year, or they've seen the super clubs vanish from the view. That's been the great thing about the Conference League. I mean, and the Europa League, to be fair. You look at like Gary Lineker literally stepped out of presenting Champions League on BT because he fancied going and following Leicester around Europe in the Conference League.
Oh yeah, shout out to Leicester actually. Shout out to Leicester.
I mean, that's kind of wild if you think about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially because this is a side that were in the Champions League not too long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, all in the balance in the Europa League, much like the Conference League. And we mentioned Leicester, but let's go to Rotterdam first.
Yes.
A smoky, smoky, smoky Rotterdam. Genuinely an unbelievable scenes at the start of this game. You might have noticed that it is our artwork. If you want to see the full one, go to our Instagram, Stadio Football, or Stadio on Twitter to see the wider picture. This was the game of the night, I thought.
Yeah, without question, I would say.
Final three, Marseille 2. Couple of quick goals in succession for Feyenoord, once again proving that men are too emotional to defend.
I got to say, that forward line, the Feyenoord forward nine, obviously including Rhys Nelson, he's having a great old time in Holland. There's a great advert for like Brits Abroad. Really impressive fluidity from them. They really just got into Marseille early on. That is, you talk about, this is the thing about this game. This is a classic big, you know, in quotes, hashtags of big European night. All those ingredients, Feyenoord, as we know, that very intense support, Marseille, that rowdy bunch too. And the return leg's going to be incredible, obviously. I think the combined fan atmosphere over these two legs will be as good as you'll find in the late stages of European tournament. And they just flew out at them. They had such great fluidity, actually. A feature of, I think, this round is really good wide play. I should have mentioned the last game. Ryan Kent was really impressive for Rangers, pulling wide for them against Leipzig, getting some joy in the flanks. And I think, again, this was a feature of this game. Like, the wide forwards for Feyenoord really just gave Marseille tremendous problems early on and destabilized them. And actually, I suppose we can say the way that Marseille started both halves is what did for them here. There was a real lack of intensity, which is, you wouldn't expect that from a Sampaoli team, actually.
That third goal was
strange. I mean, it's more of an individual error than a... But having said that, the approach there, the approach of Marseille starting the second half, so the crucial, end up being the winning goal, conceded when Marseille basically passed the ball all the way back from the halfway line. Awful back pass. But even that was kind of an attempt, I think, to take the sting out of the game. Because if you're kicking off like that, right, the instruction from Sampaoli must be like, okay, you know what? We've just got back into this. We went 2-0 down. We brought it back to 2-2 just before halftime. Let's just like regulate possession. And I suppose that I don't know if I've seen enough of Marseille this year to make this call, but this is maybe a team with like not quite enough chill.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, if Guendouzi is your like Guendouzi's been brilliant in many respects, but he is not someone that...
No, to be fair to Marseille, Sampaoli team is going to be an emotional team. You need it.
It's the atmosphere as well, though. The atmosphere was absolutely overwhelming. Like, and I think at some level, they were probably just happy to be back in the game. It's not much on discipline. It's more just like match control. So the front three, Sinisterra, Dessers, and Nelson were like outstanding in this game and really went at Marseille, who couldn't really establish sort of match control, midfield control, but they pulled themselves back into it, two at the half. And it was funny because when they got that goal, the final start of the second half, I expected like a burst more and there wasn't a breakthrough after that. So I think actually when Marseille get back to theirs, they can almost be a bit relieved, I think.
I mean, for Marseille, going back to the Velodrome with only a goal in it, that's nothing for them.
I mean, still one of the top five stadiums I've ever been in.
They dealt with the atmosphere there in Rotterdam pretty well because that is a really intimidating place to go. And this is the intriguing thing about this tie is that maybe because of the intimidating nature of both stadiums, each side will be able to deal with it a little bit better. Because I think, like for example, like Marseille played football. They didn't really, it was one error that cost them the game, really. They could have got away with this with the draw easy.
Yeah.
They were never really...
Overawed. They weren't overawed.
No, they were never overawed. And I think a lot of sides can go there and be overawed because it can be an extremely intimidating place to go to. Much like the Velodrome when it's on full song and I was going to say on fire. But
which it will be for the second leg, for sure.
Exactly.
The second leg, yeah.
But then again, maybe it might not intimidate Feyenoord as much as it might do other sides who have a little bit less hostile atmosphere. So,
can I say I do quite like this sort of little nuances tactically here of like Payet playing through the middle. I like stuff like that. I just
false Payet.
The false. So yeah, that's a really intriguing tie. It's probably the one to. It would have been the one that stood out actually on the fixture list going into the round of fixtures. I mean, I watched the main game I watched was actually Manchester United Chelsea, which shows how good I'm at picking games. By the way, apart from Atalanta, I'm really bad at picking games.
Yeah, you're dreadful. You're so bad.
To watch live? I'm terrible. I'm terrible.
Yeah, you're really bad.
Yeah. Like, generally speaking on Twitter, if you see me watching a game, run a mile, because I won't have chosen the right one to watch in real time.
But yeah, the great thing about this game, like you were saying before, I think this could have been a European Cup tie in 1971, you know? And that's the great thing about the Conference League, is that we want to see these sides in Europe, and I just wish that the finances were a little bit more spread over the competitions because, I don't know, we'll probably talk about this around May the 10th or so when they announce the confirmations to the changes in the Champions League. Because I think it's one we need to get into and we haven't had time to get into it properly. Yeah. But yeah, maybe I'm just too old. Maybe I'm too geriatric millennial. But this is a European tie I want to see. Yeah. I want to see sides like Marseille in a European semi-final. I want to see Feyenoord in a European semi-final. You know, I want to see Rangers and Celtic and all of these sides in European semi-finals. I want to see them there. That's why I think it's so great to see Villarreal in the semi-final of the Champions League. They've won the games to be there.
Yeah.
Because we're so used to not seeing sides like Marseille and Feyenoord go this deep for a long, long time. It's just nice. It's just new. It's kind of new again.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I'm surprised by how much I've taken to these formats, if I'm honest. I've really got into them. I think it's, to be honest, that's credit to the players and the teams, the quality of the football.
But yeah, let's talk about Leicester and Roma. I was listening to Second Captains before the games when we got Stadio out on Thursday. And Ken was talking about how in the lead up to the game, it was just a praise off between like Jose Mourinho and Brendan Rodgers.
Oh, that's so funny.
And there was a moment in this game, which was so amazing, where Mourinho was really trying to kick off. And then he walked back past Rodgers, stopped and gave Rodgers a hug. And I wrote a tweet. The only tweet I wrote about this game was, you know, Mourinho's never too angry to stop and give Rodgers a hug.
Oh,
I think Jose Mourinho genuinely thinks he created Brendan Rodgers in a lab. The way that he talks about him is just like he's
well, like Jordan and Kobe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He is probably like the only protege he's ever had, really, if you think about it.
Well, he's like, that's his like Sir Bobby moment. He's like Sir Bobby and like, yeah, that's yeah, his, yeah, 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 yeah. Watching old Mourinho interviews is just so, it's mind blowing considering like the man he's turned into.
I know, it's mad.
Slightly grumpy uncle, but I enjoy it. I do enjoy grumpy uncle Mourinho. This was actually quite a big deal for Roma to come to Leicester. I think it was quite big for Tammy as well, maybe being back on.
Yeah.
English soil, getting people to have a look at what he's been up to. And he didn't score tonight, but his movement was very impressive again.
Last night.
Pellegrini, arguably the only player who could claim to be on the level consistently as Tammy Abraham this year. Pellegrini and Tammy Abraham probably the two players of the year, maybe for Roma, I would say. And he got a lovely goal. He runs really well. He's as good as almost any midfielder at making that kind of breaking run, I think, through the middle of the pitch. So yeah, really, really nice goal from Roma. And
yeah, the pass from Zaleski was lovely.
Yeah, all down the left. They combined really well throughout, to be honest. And they've got a really nice kind of, I really like those 3-5-2s with the eights, you know, just being complete freedom, and they exploit that really well. But Leicester did well. Leicester were quite tough and didn't allow them to sort of pull away.
Yeah, and Castagna had that one chance before he went off injured, right? Which I thought was well, I mean, losing him was a big blow. And I think they actually recovered quite well from it because at that point, Roma were already one up.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they dealt with that quite well.
Harvey Barnes doing really well down the flanks.
Changed the game when he came on, I thought.
Yeah, this is the thing about Leicester. They've just got, they're recruiting.
They have a squad full of work experience, boys.
Yeah.
They really do. And that's not a comment on their ability, but just like, oh, here's Harvey. He's going to be spending a week with us this week.
Yeah.
Very wholesome work experience lads, you know, and they just seem to always pop in and just... He's brilliant, man. I think he did really well for the goal, obviously, the Mancini own goal. But he really injected some life into Leicester again. And that second half, I thought they were unlucky maybe not to get another, I think.
What is it with them this season? Is it just a stretched squad? Is it just the sheer quality of coaching in the league? I think maybe it's, I don't know if it's the latter. They haven't quite kicked on as I would have expected in the Premier League.
I think it's difficult now, though.
I think basically, apart from
that top three, you could have nine clubs that could literally finish in any order below that, I think.
That's a good shout.
For example, if this season Arsenal had finished ninth, it wouldn't have surprised me. If Spurs had finished seventh, it wouldn't surprise me. If West Ham had finished fifth or finished fifth, it wouldn't have surprised me. Do you know what I mean? The only real surprise, well, it's not really a surprise now since Christmas or since the new year, but Newcastle being there. But obviously because of the influx of money and how Eddie Howe's turned that around, then that's understandable. Because if you think, like, Arsenal have been a bit of a mess on and off, although I think they've kind of settled down. Man United are obviously a bit of a mess. Tottenham have had two managers this season and no one seems to be happy, like truly happy, you know. West Ham have been maintaining that vibe from last season, but they've had European competition as well, and they've actually dealt with that pretty well. They're still in European places in the league while maintaining a European charge. Wolves are up there. We know how tough Wolves are to beat. You've got Leicester in 10th, but then below them, you've got Brighton and Brentford and Southampton, and then Crystal Palace, who we've bigged up this season quite a lot, and then Villa, who we've bigged up quite a lot this season because of Gerrard. And that's taken you all the way down to 15th.
Do you know what's wild actually about this? If Leicester end up 9th and get to the Europa Conference final,
that's not that bad.
Really good season.
Yeah, I know.
Isn't it?
I mean, maybe Leicester fans might tell us different, but I would say that that's pretty decent because
I think we forget what Leicester have achieved. Actually, I think I sometimes forget.
Yeah, I do. Just I mean, they won the FA Cup last year. They beat Chelsea in the FA Cup final. So
yeah, it's wild.
I think they're good.
They're good. They're really good.
Again, another one all to play for. I know this has been quite a wishy-washy analysis of these games, but they are so in the balance. There's just no. I don't think you can call pretty much any of them definitively.
I got to say, I got to take my hat off to UEFA for this one because if you'd said to me that I'd be enjoying these games at this stage and would be like invested in them emotionally, I would have been like, no, I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, I'm just the only thing they fucked up was the league, the names really. You know, you're going straight in with another one, and arguably the Conference League has had more vibes this season, so they should have just called it Vibes League.
The Vibes League. Yeah, they should have.
Quickly, elsewhere, Manchester United drew 1-1 with Chelsea in the Premier League.
That took the bulk of my attention. I wish it hadn't, but yeah.
Marcos Alonso put Chelsea ahead on the hour mark with a lovely volley. And then 2 minutes later, Cristiano Ronaldo brought the ball down out of the sky and smashed it home. A lovely goal. We should kind of keep it quite brief on this, I think, because this wasn't a massively pivotal game. I said last week to Wrighty after the Chelsea-Arsenal game, it was a game that Arsenal needed to win a hell of a lot more than Chelsea did. And you could kind of see that in the performance. They were a little bit like, not half-assed, but just lacking that intensity a little bit. Mm. And I think it was the same here, really, because Ralf Rangnick had already said that top four was gone. I think Manchester United, they're kind of just lacking that urgency.
They're lacking
something to play for, really, because I don't think they will be too bothered if they get into the Europa League or if they drop out of Europe altogether as a group, maybe. Because
it's grim. It's been a grim season for them.
But throwing money at a problem without ever fully fixing it hasn't worked for Manchester United. But you've seen how much even if Arsenal finished fifth this season, they've been ahead of schedule. And I think a lot of that has been down to them not being in Europe whatsoever. Having more time on the training ground. And with Ten Hag coming in next season, he will need as much time on the training ground with those players. Do you remember like Carlo Ancelotti coming out and just saying like, when you're actually playing in Europe and the league, you barely get any time on the training ground because you're always traveling, you got rest day and all of this kind of stuff.
The preseason is essential then to get the structures
in place.
It is,
yeah. So for Manchester United, I think, yeah, they obviously want to win trophies and they've won the Europa League not too long ago, but missing out on European football for 1 year and letting Ten Hag just spend as many hours with those players as possible for the long term, I think is probably the best thing from a coaching point of view. I know that you should never take European football for granted, but it's been papering over cracks for so long.
Mm.
There needs to be a big reset.
Talking of resets, not huge resets, but I'm actually slightly not concerned about Chelsea, but if I look at the way they started the season, obviously the off-field stuff, Abramovich, the sanctions, all of that, that's affected things. I'm not sure entirely how much has affected the players. I don't know. But Chelsea, they've lacked a fluidity in attack. Reece James was great last night, by the way. He was probably the one sort of really big highlight for Chelsea. They're losing some really good defenders. The ones they're not losing are getting old quick, like Thiago Silva.
No, I saw Ollie Glanville talking about that this is something that Chelsea have done over the last couple of seasons, really, where they've just, their intensity over the last 10 games or so has just dropped off when they've... Mm.
Nothing to play for.
Yeah, especially in the league. But I mean, last season they were pushing for the Champions League, so, and they had an FA Cup final. So I think
they could have done Madrid as well. They could have
They could have. It's all about the FA Cup final for them now.
Yeah,
keeping sharp, no injuries, making sure you have everyone available because you know you're playing one of the best sides in the world. But it has been, I think, quite a tough season for them. So much of that depends on the takeover, which I think is down to 3 bidders now, and Abramovich has just decided to ramp up the asking price by 500 million to donate to his foundation.
Pocket change, my God.
Which is just absurd at this stage of the game. So it's been a little bit messy. I mean, they're going to finish third. I don't think anyone's going to catch them. They win the FA Cup. Another trophy for them.
Can't knock that. I think that's par for the course, I think, for them if they get an FA Cup as well. But yeah, we'll see.
In the Women's Super League, Chelsea beat Spurs 2-1. Oh, this is going to be annoying for Arsenal fans. Spurs equalising after Beth England put Chelsea ahead. Kerris Harrop equalising just before half-time. And then Sam Kerr giving Chelsea the lead again in stoppage time at the end of the first half. A lovely assist from Pinilla Harder. Wow, this ball was unbelievable. But Spurs did okay, I thought. Chelsea at 4 points clear of Arsenal, having played a game more. just a couple of games left for Chelsea now. They go to Birmingham on the weekend. Then their final game is at home to Manchester United, whereas Arsenal host Villa, host Spurs, and then go to West Ham on the final day of the season. So from an Arsenal point of view, they're probably looking at that Manchester United game for Chelsea and hoping that that'll be the place that they slip up. Who knows? If Arsenal slip up against Villa or Spurs, it'll be done before then.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on OneSuite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
All right, man, let's talk about Kloppo.
Yes, he's extended his contract. It will now end in 2026, and that will take him up to a decade at Liverpool, which is incredible.
Imagine having Jurgen Klopp in charge of your club for 11 years. If he sees his contract out to the end, it'll be 11 years and a bit.
Everything Klopp has achieved was inevitable. There are very few sure things in football, right? But the absolute certainty is that whoever got Klopp was going to absolutely soar. There was no question.
I remember this, the day that he had his first press conference. I was just like,
everyone knew.
This is going to be good for Liverpool. This is going to be really good. I'm going to do a piece for The Ringer about this because there was a line in his first press conference which really stuck out to me and I think got lost because people were focusing on the, you know, Klopp says we will win in 4 years, which they did. They won the Champions League in less than four years later. He kept saying he wanted to try to help. And I found it such a fascinating choice of phrase because he repeated it a few times in that press conference. And I think this just goes to Klopp's whole thing. And what makes him so special is that he is fully aware of how important everyone is around him. I watched a few interviews with him or when he was talking about coaching. And there was one thing that he says, like, he never walks into a room and thinks he's an expert. He surrounds himself by experts in various things because he's not. But what his role as a manager is to bring in the right people to cover those expert areas. And you saw this in the terms of the contract. Klopp's not increasing his salary.
Yeah.
But his coaching staff are. That was part of the negotiation.
The message that sends as well.
In the modern era, for a club of Liverpool's size, it is very, very, very hard to generate a connection between club, manager, fans, and the city that it's located in.
Yeah.
To this degree.
That alignment is extremely rare.
But he did the same thing at Dortmund, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fact that he asked his agent to then speak to FSG and see if they were interested in extending now, the timing could not be better for him and for Liverpool. He's an all-timer. He's an all-timer.
Without question. And it's funny because when Klopp didn't win a couple of the early finals, I remember there were members, you know, just different fans, right? Different clubs who were mocking it. And I was like, I know fear when I see it. It's so interesting what fans make fun of. And they generally make fun of things that they're afraid of.
Mm.
And with Klopp, early Klopp, it was like, oh my God, they messed up in that final. Like, they lost to Sevilla in the Europa League final. That's Sevilla. That's like football royalty. They shouldn't even be there. They shouldn't even be in that final. Like, for them to have won that would have been like,
at
you
that
know,
stage, yeah.
Exactly. So I was like, and I had chats with lots of friends about this, like lots of United fan friends. I was like, this is bad. This is very bad.
Yeah.
But what I will say from an unbiased perspective, I just love his outlook. I love the way he coaches players, improves them year on year. And what I'll say is this, actually, what I really like about Guardiola and Klopp is they have helped to shift the perception that the first thing you do when a team is struggling is sack the manager.
Mm.
They've helped shift that because if you look at Klopp, Klopp has been at what, Dortmund, he was longer serving Dortmund manager, I think. He likes to get stuck into things, right? You know, we call them projects with a cynical phrase, but actually I think you can say, it's fair to say it's a project in the sense of if the project is to align, as you said, those elements, you know, fans, players, manager and city, that's his project. Mm. He's been successful at that at every single place. And looking at someone like Klopp and the way that he improves players, I wonder if that's empowered other clubs to kind of be like, well, actually, let's place more of an emphasis on coaching. Because if you look at the huge signings, right, you look at like the investment in Klopp and how much his contract has cost and his team as well, for like sake of argument. And if you look at, Ryan, the huge money signings, the like 50 million plus signings, and how many of those signings have actually flopped, it is a safer investment, a better investment to just have an incredible coach.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Because also we've talked about this before, and especially in the modern game where it feels like the clubs that can genuinely win stuff on the regular is becoming, the pool of clubs is becoming smaller and smaller.
Mm.
I think especially for a city like Liverpool and a club like Liverpool, I think this is what is making the Everton struggles even starker in contrast, because they kind of had that with Ancelotti. They looked like they'd found their guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to kind of switch this to Everton because I'm, you know, I don't want to remind Everton fans of what happened, but obviously for those who didn't follow it so much, but like he really plugged himself into the community at a really difficult time, like during the pandemic. And Klopp has done the same with Liverpool. You know, there was a great piece on The Athletic, I think it was David Ornstein, who was kind of detailing some stuff about this. And, you know, him and his wife, Ulla, in the pandemic, going around and dropping Waitrose vouchers into NHS staff.
Amazing.
Klopp referenced his wife, Ulla, in the announcement video, and I thought it was quite sweet in a way, because he said, you know, Ulla wants to stay.
What's that great line? How can we leave all these people in 2024?
Yeah.
How can we do this?
And you see so much cold, hard finance, business, fuck this shit, I'm out of here, I'm gone kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to see a manager and a family plug into the real kind of like emotional energy of a city, which I know people taunt because of the whole this means more stuff and all of this kind of shit. But it's
but
like,
it does.
But also, I do think there's a real sense of envy that goes with a lot of that, because all of us want to feel that connection to our football clubs.
It's the Bill Shankly stuff.
It is, very much,
and it's absolutely that. Yeah, yeah.
I think that's why we're all, as football fans, especially when we see our clubs are at a certain commercial level, we kind of fear that we won't ever get that again.
Mm.
And I think that's what Liverpool have done really, really well here. On the men's side, obviously, I hope that they, now that their women's side has been promoted back into the WSL, I really hope that they actually invest in the women's side more.
Yeah.
Because they really deserve it. I think also Klopp, he does really well on that stuff. He highlighted how poor that was from the club not to invest in the women's side. You know, he doesn't shy away from anything like that. It's just a perfect fit. And
it is.
You know, in that Athletic piece, there's a lot of stuff about him feeling like he kind of lost 18 months because of the pandemic. And I mean, we talked about it last season, where a lot of people were questioning whether he should go. And we were like, they had something like 19 different centre-back partnerships last season.
It's bizarre.
Like an obscene amount of injuries.
Yeah, and also just
playing behind closed doors. Like for someone like Klopp, like you could see when that season they won the league. Yeah, they won the league and he put that kind of 30-year wait to bed, whatever. But there was part of him that kind of hated it because no one was there. And that's such a thing about Klopp. Like it is a shared experience.
Mm.
It's not just him. Like trophies don't really mean that much to him, I don't think, if no one else gets to enjoy them. And that's why you saw that at Dortmund. You've seen that at Liverpool. I'm also glad for the Premier League, because the Premier League is better with Klopp in it.
It is wild how close he's pushed Guardiola.
It's unbelievable.
He's only 1 point behind him.
Yeah, it's
since 2018, 2019.
Genuinely incredible.
Behind that Manchester City, which is basically the final boss.
Anything else you want to add on the Klopp thing? Or we're going to get so much stick for just the love fest about Klopp.
So but you know what? So fuck what? Like, so what? That's what it's about.
Like, one of my favourite Dortmund sides, or favourite non-Arsenal football sides of all time, was that Dortmund side that went to the final in 2013, the Champions League final.
Likewise, unbelievable team. Do you know what? With the Klopp, the thing about him is, I'll say, actually, I marginally prefer English spoken with a German accent because of him. I prefer it to English spoken with an
English accent. One of my favourite things about the thing where he said, you know, FSG thought it'd be a good idea to get a German fella in. It's really interesting seeing his old English now to his new one, because he is so Scouse.
Yes.
His phrasing is so Scouse. It's going to be really interesting to see what Pep does, I think, because you're seeing two managers now who, you know,
they're enjoying themselves.
Exude a lot of energy. And they're both stepping into real uncharted territory in terms of how long they've spent at clubs.
Guardiola is really enjoying the rivalry. He's enjoying it. He must be loving it.
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah. Because he doesn't have to worry about anything else now. It's just, he's got the resources, it's the football, and he's got this brilliant mind to try and outthink every week.
Mm.
That's the challenge. Like, that's why Pep leaves places, why he goes to others. He loves the challenge. That's what he does, right? He always seeks that out.
Yeah, I mean, the cool thing about that is that if Pep stays, Klopp's obviously staying. If Tuchel extends as well and stays at Chelsea, Tuchel could build something at Chelsea similar to what Pep and Klopp have built at Liverpool and
Without question.
Man City.
Without question.
Tuchel is one of the few managers that Chelsea have got in who I think can command that kind of authority at Chelsea, especially with new ownership coming in.
And he's that good.
And he's that good, yeah. I mean,
we said that 1,000 times, but I don't think we can fully acknowledge until we step back from it the fact that we have three of the greatest all-time coaches in the Premier League right now, like in the top three. Tuchel's like one of the greats. He'll go there. He's there. He'll end up there, but like arguably top three in the world.
I don't want to get into this argument.
What I'll say is, of the top five...
Christian Streich, number one.
Haha, yes, well... Anyway, we'll get in trouble. I'll get myself in trouble now.
Don't rate managers.
You
know the rules.
I don't rate any managers. No, I'm joking.
All right, let's get out of here. Friday Stadio. Oh.
Goodness me.
Dressed down on this Stadio Friday. I'm wearing an NTS t-shirt and some tracky bottoms.
I might wear my Stadio sweatshirt later today, actually.
Look at you.
For the first time ever, yeah.
We hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Don't forget, 3 Stadios next week. On that note, shout out to Jordan Rizzieri, who rightly pulled us up about this, who said, how can we say that we've got 3 Stadios next week and not say 3 straight Stadios next week?
Someone replied and said, you had one job.
One job. So there you go. 3 straight Stadios next week. Who knows?
Go to it.
Might get 4.
Oh my God.
Who knows?
The poor feed.
All right, everyone. Don't forget to check yesterday's Stadio if you haven't checked it already about the Champions League. Chat Wright's house from Monday. We're going to be at the Women's Champions League semi-final, second leg between Wolfsburg and Barcelona this weekend.
We are indeed.
Don't forget to check theringer.com/soccer. We didn't even shout it out. Oh no, we shouted it out yesterday, Moose's piece.
We did, yeah. But thank you.
One quick shout. If you do listen to us on a podcast app that allows you to rate and review, please do so. Be very kind. And check the Stadio Outro's playlist on Spotify. Speaking of which, we are playing out on a classic. It's the Vanessa Kendrick version of 90% of Me is You. So we're going to roll out to this one. Anything you want to add, Moussa Kwonga?
Nothing further. Nothing
further. You keep promising to add stuff and you just lie. Have a lovely weekend, everyone. Much love. We'll be back on Monday.
See you then.
you, baby, you control my mind. I can't think of no one but you. You control my lips, which snow for your tender kiss. I never thought it was possible that I could be controlled like this.